podcast is part of the Sports Social Podcast Network.
It's the Anfield Wrap after a Liverpool 1-0 victory against Crystal Palace. We haven't seen many of them at home, Paul Johnson, Rob Gutman and Dan Morgan. And I'll start with you, Dan, on that. I thought everyone was struggling to sort of get into the idea that this was going to be a game Liverpool were always going to be the better side in and win 1-0. We've forgotten how to be used to that sort of thing.
We have, yeah. Probably going back to Rafa days, to be honest. But I think everyone, bar the players, were kind of wondering what we were going to see and what we were seeing. But the players looked like they remained calm throughout the 90, to be honest. And for me, there was never one point where I thought we wouldn't score. And probably the bench buys into that a little bit and the whole setup. But I think there's quite clearly a shift in notion in this game that, you know, if we look back to just last season, we have this thing where if we've not blown a team away in half an hour, then, you know, we all feel an inevitable doom that it might not happen. But in this game, you know, I think it was quite different that everyone had just set out for at least the first 60 to see how it played, and then Liverpool would eventually go on and win the game. And it was really nice, really refreshing to see, I thought.
Yeah, I wonder if that was a product of knowing that we had a bench. You know, because we had Salah and Chan on the bench, and Solanke, there's a bit of faith in him at the moment. I think that helps calm you down a bit. I wasn't quite as relaxed as you were, Dan. I have to say, I was getting fatalistic about it. I'd felt coming into the game, I think I previewed it on a couple of different shows in a way, and there was a bit of confidence that Palace were in a terrible way and that we should be able to blow them away. I just felt that we've looked leggy in both our games. The rotation options are not massive, and that this would be a grinder. And I think Klopp probably pointed that out to them, just said, be patient, stay in the game. And you have to say the plan worked. And we did build a head of steam, didn't we, there? The first half was frustrating. You kind of were waiting for this. I wanted the first half out of the way. Once you saw the pattern of it, this is just nonsense now. We may get a goal, but we probably won't. Let's not go in behind, and let's get the second half underway. Let's see their legs go a little bit. Let's siege them a bit more. And eventually get that moment, because it was definitely scripted that Salah would come on. I definitely think he had a plan that Salah was part of how you win this football match, not just save it, but actively win it.
I think the other thing is, I think the crowd almost feels that they see Palace getting beat by Huddersfield at home last week 3-0, you know, and they think that it's going to be another Watford of last season, or Hull, and we're going to, you know, beat them 6-7-0, which, you know, we'd all love that to happen. But I think Palace away, like any away side, are going to be a lot different than they are at home. You know what I mean? You're asking, you know, Palace at home to Huddersfield to probably try and come out, and they struggled and they got beat. Probably Huddersfield did exactly what Palace did to us yesterday. So the game was always, if you didn't score early, you were always going to have to try and grind one out. And I think
the speed, they went to a back five.
Yeah.
I thought as soon as they lost the ball, it wasn't like Hoffenheim where there was lads just hanging on right up the pitch and waiting to win it back and go.
Yeah.
I couldn't believe how quickly they were like, we're a five now, boys.
Yes, totally. And he thought, if we don't concede, we walk out of here with at least a point, and then we might nick one on a break, which he could have. Benteke, you know, could have scored with the chance he had. But I think I was just what you were saying, I was confident that we'd score, but it was getting to the point where it was just becoming a little bit, you know, the crowd were getting a little bit anxious. And I think there was a couple of times we were forcing it a little bit, a few passes that, you know, were potentially we didn't need to keep it a little bit longer. So where you were saying, you were starting to get worried, Rob.
Yeah.
I think it was coming in, but, you know, hopefully we scored a good point, really, with 72 on the clock. It kind of, everyone's, you know, nerves were sort of put to bed a little bit.
What made me think it was coming just before it came? And I think in general there's a conversation to be had about, so I'm going to come on to it this side. And I think there's three or four times first half where, Paul, the bang on top, and they just don't grind that last little bit out. They don't quite just keep dominating in the way in which they dominate for 4 minutes, when if they dominated for nine, they'd probably get a goal.
Yeah, yeah.
There was a bit of that first half, and we'll have a chat about that, because there's a couple of players, I think, who let the side down a little bit in that. But what made me think just before it was going to come, was that we just created a goalmouth scramble on 70. And that was where I was thinking, these now look mentally tired as much as physically tired. These now look like this has got dead hard all of a sudden. And for a few minutes before that, they were just beginning to wonder. But for instance, Van Aanholt gets booked for time wasting about 60, and that, he thinks he's being helpful there, but that made me think, no, he knows his teammates have gone a bit. And then there was that scramble on 70, and then we score from the next scramble on 73. Yeah. And that, it's not taking sides apart, but when you're creating those situations, you are thinking to yourself, there's four or five more of these by 90, and surely it goes in once.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. And obviously, to once it went in on 72, there was a number of chances after that where it could have, you know, we could have walked away with a 3-0 victory easy, and that wouldn't have flattered us. You know, I didn't read the forums, but the headline, Letizia said we deserved the points on Sky. We did. You can't walk away. I think the ball turned around and said that, you know,
we should have got something from the game.
Well, do you know what? You had two real shots on. Well, obviously, Benteke didn't hit the target. And in the first half, Punchin had the one after Firmino at the shot for us.
Yeah.
So apart from that, they didn't really do anything to stand out. And as you say there, once we got the goal and that pressure was building, you could only see what was going on and scored another one. And again, but for a couple of good saves from the keeper, we let a bit lucky. And Robertson was unlucky with him, tipped over the bar, didn't he?
Yeah.
He could have easily won that game 2-3-0. So, yeah, that pressure was good to build on.
I thought it was interesting, the shift in them once Salah come on, because I thought they were quite interesting up until he did come on. I thought they were... I didn't think they were quintessential Crystal Palace, sitting in, playing for set pieces and just trying to get one on us when they caught and lump bodies in the box. But once Salah came on, they very much just went, right, we're all going back now. We're all dropping 5 yards and we'll do that. We'll basically suck the life out the game a little bit and try and get this point. So that probably bought into the inevitability that if anything was going to come, it was going to come down our end and there was going to be this siege at their goal, which I thought was just... I just thought that they'd become a little bit more cautious once he came on and thought, right, well... We've actively looked to break. We've actively looked to not sit in too deep. But now he's on. We can't let this lad get in behind us, because you've still got Mane on the pitch. You've still got Robertson going forward, making these runs inside. So I think that kind of just... I think it's a really good sub in that if it's 0-0, it's not a Ben Woodburn, no disrespect to the kid, or it's not a, you know, an Origi to some extent coming on the pitch. It's you know... Mo Salah can open up another avenue for us, and you know, you've still got other players there on the bench who can likewise do similar.
Yeah, I thought his direct running made a difference. Turned the game, or was it coming without him? I don't know. I said at the beginning of this, I think that's part of Klopp's plan, that Salah could give us that extra impetus. We start with it on paper a strong front three. It was perfectly reasonable to give him the rest, but we looked to have so many attacking options when he was on the pitch. It was interesting, Klopp's after-match comments. He talks about a moment in the first half, he said, where Robertson gets a great cross in, but Firmino and Sturridge have been part of the process of getting him into position to make the cross, and therefore Klopp was lamenting the lack of bodies in the box. With Salah, he did it. He got the ball up the pitch himself. There's one long run where he's strong. You know, he looks stronger in this game. Maybe it's because he's against tiring legs. Mm. I thought this was his best 30 of the three matches he's played here. He looked stronger, more direct, and his touch looked better. His eye looked in when he took his shot. Mm-hmm. He was a bit unlucky with a curler. Yeah, he made a difference. He made a big, big difference. I think I liked how bold we were in going to that effectively, let's call it what it was, a 4-2-4 with two men in the middle, two very fast lads out wide, and two centre mids who had control of the pitch and they weren't coming out. It was, yeah, I think they knew their goose was cooked when that happened.
I thought, there's about 2-3 minutes and then that's the goal. Rob.
Yeah.
And I actually thought both, and it's hard to tell because there's the goal, but I thought it helped everybody on the pitch. When Solanke came on, I thought everyone, they were rotating. It wasn't like they had set positions, the four of them. They were taking turns to come and be the one who was a bit deeper. It was Mane for 5 minutes, but then Solanke started there, and then they were. It wasn't quite as clear cut as someone's now gone and done a little bit of that. And so they were just a flowing four. But I thought Milner has his best 20 minutes of the game after Solanke comes on.
Yep.
I thought Henderson had his best period of the game after Solanke comes on, where suddenly it looked to me like those lads, Milner and Henderson especially, they suddenly had another body in front of them to pass to.
Mm-hmm.
They had another option. They had another lane. Rather than it be, you're just sort of trying to stop these three, there was suddenly just someone else there. Whereas when it was Milner and Wijnaldum, with Henderson sort of a bit deeper, you know, Milner's looking up and there's meant to be three of them, and there might be Robertson on the overlap, but it's still not. It's not a fourth attacker. And I just thought from that point onwards, I thought everyone on the pitch looked better at that point.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, what was nice about it was that, as you say, that when they all dropped back into that position, it looked very comfortable. They all looked quite fluid doing it. You know, there wasn't anyone who didn't sort of suit that position. And as you say, from that point on, once we scored the goal, it was easy that we could have easily scored another couple. And I think Solanke, for me, I mean, you know, he's impressed in pre-season. He looks like he's going to be a real player for us. And you know, to have him on the bench again, like you were saying about Salah. But again, you were also looking at the bench thinking there were other changes that, you know, if it would have got to 75 without a goal, then you felt that there was changes on the bench, like to Solanke, who could come on and finish, you know, and get one. He was unlucky with his, you know, hit the target, I suppose, with his main money when he had a chance. But I like that fluidity that they all dropped into that. And it would be interesting to see in other games like that, even where we didn't quite get the goal, whether that's employed at home, you know, to have that sort of four going forward. Because I think if you need the goal, that's the best way to go.
You wonder what they're seeing from Solanke in training as well, because he's edged. He's gone from being, will he augment the under-23s and sort of come into the first team squad, to having pushed Origi definitively down that pecking order now. It's quite clear he's ahead of him. How long that lasts, we don't know. And that's as much to do with Origi's drop off. But still... And after yesterday's evidence, you'd have to say that at least temporarily, Daniel Sturridge will probably drop below Solanke. I think he wants to start a forward against Hoffenheim, an orthodox forward. It isn't going to be Daniel Sturridge, not on that showing, because Daniel wasn't. I think he did okay.
Yeah.
He did bits all over the pitch.
He had some nice touches, didn't he?
There's no terrible mistakes or lack of interest from him. But he did look like he was wading through porridge at times. And I'm not putting that down to the fact that he's finished, because I know people around here love to say he's finished. He's been out for a month, hasn't he? Yeah. Quietly. Again, and he has got fragile muscle structure, so he wasn't. I think you might get an amazing 10 minutes like we saw in the derby out of Daniel Sturridge at the moment. It's hard to see him starting and having impact. I don't know, maybe he needs a couple more weeks.
Yeah, I said before the game on the WhatsApp group that I'd have been really up for Solanke starting and maybe giving Sturridge that 30 if it wasn't going that way. But the thing with Solanke is, I mean, you can see that he can really drop into that front three and not look out of place. And he's not your target man. He's not your mark man who's going to play on the last defender. He drops in, he can interact. And at times last season, when we dropped Origi in there, I just thought you could see Coutinho, Firmino, the Reds were burnt out with him.
On that, just to use the Origi comparison, I think Sturridge is a bit different, but, you know, I was talking to Liverpool Echo's Christian Walsh in the boozer last night briefly, and we had a little chat, and one of the things Christian said, and I think he's right, is Origi looks tailor-made to be the striker in a 4-2-3-1.
Yeah.
That's what he looks like. He just looks like he's the striker in a 4-2-3-1. Might want to work in a 2 with someone like Sturridge, with a really good player, but looks tailor-made to me to be in a striker in a 4-2-3-1, where he's gonna have all that responsibility on the one hand, but the expectation that he mostly only does the one thing. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like Lukaku. Whereas, in the, you know, you look at our sort of 4-3-3 and the fluidness, and when it goes to 4-2-4, that's where he struggled, I think. Even when he was scoring goals last season, the 4-3-3, Dan, he wasn't suited to the fluid sort of movement of, you're going to spend a bit of time here, you're going to spend a bit of time there. And that's got even greater, I think, this season. And so you do see why Solanke will be ahead of him in the pecking order quite quickly.
Exactly. And that's what I think if you look at yesterday, we quite clearly have two triangles on each side of the fullback, a centre midfielder and a winged attacker. And they try and open up these spaces and work one of those three into a position where, you know, you can get it into the box or pull back for someone or float one over. The thing with it is, quite often, it's the central striker who has to start that, because he'll come deep, pick it up, pop it off, and then get in. And with Origi, he never quite knew where to be for me. And there was the thing of, he was never quite on the level of your Brazilians who could get their head up and it'd be one touch, whereas Solanke, I don't know. I mean, you know, we have to take it in the context of the situation he comes on in the game, and everyone's a little bit more tired, and I get that. But he just looks like he can interact a little bit more and know how to position himself and know where to be. But I thought, particularly first half, you see him with Sturridge, that he wanted to come and get involved, but at times his legs couldn't carry him to where he needed to be, or he just looked that little bit more leggy when we got in positions where we could open teams up. And I thought that, yeah, I thought it was maybe a case for Solanke to start and then Sturridge to do the last 30, but all's well that ends well, I suppose.
Just to sort of develop this sort of thing, Paul, one of the things that strikes me, and I mentioned it on last night's post-match show, so whilst I was talking, it's sort of occurred to me that it's been a long time. I mean, a really long time since I can think of a Liverpool centre-forward who runs the game. And I think in all of our three games so far, our best sort of 20-25 minutes have been when Firmino's running it. genuinely running the game in the way in which a centre mid, when he's flying, runs the game, you know, or you know, a more orthodox sort of footballer runs the game. So, you know, for all the strengths of, say, Lukaku, and he's got genuine strengths, and we're seeing them at the minute, but he doesn't run football matches for you. He gets on the end of things and makes and puts it in the back of the net. Whereas Firmino was for a period of time there, and as in all three games, he was running that match. It was the match revolves around what he does.
I think, as you say as well, it's all about the front three. When he's in the middle, Firmino, he looks such a better player, doesn't he? And that's where he can do his bits. And we were noticed at the game yesterday about, you know, when he swapped with Sturridge, and Sturridge ends up being the front three, well, front middle one of the front three, it doesn't look as fluid. Now, whether that's because, like you said, Rob, he's just come back from injury. You know, he seemed to be, there was one down the left first half where the ball went down to him and he just had to run and get his body in. And even if he thought, you know, I'll just get my body in, and he just seemed to just literally stop. And it was when he was on the left, Sturridge, and I just think, sometimes by obviously rotating them, I understand why you do it, but you lose Firmino. And as you just said, Danny, when he runs the game, you do look a better outfit, don't you? You look like you're going to open them up more than when he's out, either on one of the side positions of the three.
I think I know what you mean about Firmino running the game, and he hasn't had great three games, but he's had a great, as you said, 15 or 20 in each game. I think Mane's been running these games more than
I don't, but I'm going to talk to you about that now. That's why I was literally setting this up.
Okay. Well, I think the reason, I think he's very quiet first half, Mane, and that's one of the reasons we don't seem to get on top of it. I think by the second half, him and Robertson have something going on, and we build from, it's not particularly effective, we build from it. Against Hoffenheim, I think in the second half, our control of that football match comes from him. I think we get back into the game against Watford because of him.
All the way round. So I think what happens is when Firmino grows into the game, he's bringing Mane with him loads. And what I mean about that is Mane's our outball and he's our most important player. So this isn't a conversation over who's the most important player.
Sure.
My point is more, I think that suddenly when Firmino is spinning and running and just dropping little areas and picking the ball up and pulling men all over the space, all of a sudden it's easier for Liverpool to get Mane on the ball.
Yeah.
So that's the thing I'm seeing. As soon as they look up and they're getting closer and closer to it, the first thing they're looking for is where's Mane.
This is the Barnes-Beardsley argument was had in the day.
I thought it might be that basically that there's the difference between someone who becomes the outball and someone who's facilitating all of this.
Yeah.
And you don't this is the sort of thing you don't get to see in attack. So often you'll argue around centre midfielders and say, is Mascherano more important than Alonso? Is Alonso more important than Mascherano? But these two footballers are so strange, and I think they are both strange footballers. Neither of them are conventional, but they're having this same sort of issue stroke. I can't even think of the word, back and forth in a positive sense. As fans, we might have it in a, well, I think he was better. Well, I think he was better.
Yeah.
But they're having this same sort of back and forth in attack, which makes them so difficult to deal with.
Yeah.
Because you don't know if you're the defender, if you don't want to let Firmino get it into feet. But if that means you've got to create space for someone else and then Mane drops deep do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
That's what I think we're seeing. When we've been on it in these three games, that's what we've been seeing. We just haven't probably seen it for long enough.
Yeah, I think that's interesting. I mean, it is noticeable how Firmino sees himself. I think they both do, actually. They're both quite quietly quite assertive footballers who take responsibility. I think we've seen that come on with Mane this season, but Firmino was growing very fast last season, I think, that side of him. I know you don't particularly like to see the shot for its own sake, but I thought the two shots that Firmino had were very important in the context of the game. The one in the first half, I think, was probably our first shot on target, has it come out before Mane's chance? I can't remember. Either way, I don't know. It felt like it was, don't underestimate us, Palace. We've got that kind of threat in our locker. Mm. A bit like when, maybe taking the mantle on from Coutinho, maybe allowing Firmino to take that sort of slightly more senior role. And I felt in the second half, Firmino gets another one away, doesn't he, before we score. Is it the one that just whistles over? Or,
past the post.
Yeah,
looked in all the way.
I
couldn't believe it wasn't in. It was a real, because I was right behind it.
Were you in the
lower centenary?
Oh, okay.
I was right
in the main stand, you don't get to see how close you're up, because you're thinking, and the keeper's down.
diving. That's always a sign, isn't it? If you keep us diving, you're thinking, well, he's what are you? But I didn't know how close it was.
I thought it was in right up to the point at which it went past.
Really?
the only point I thought this isn't in was when it wasn't in. If you know what I mean.
I was just probably a few meters above you in the opposite, and I felt behind both the first half and the second half, and in both cases I thought these are going. It would be. I mean, Firmino's. He only scored really one long distance sighter for us, I think, against Arsenal in his first season. I'd like to see him.
He got that one against Stoke when he came on.
Oh, of course.
I don't like the shot, but I don't have like how Firmino strikes it when he decides he's going to strike it.
He gets behind that first one, doesn't he? And it's a real palm stinger.
I think if he gets one or two close together and his eyes in, it's like Coutinho didn't score those goals he scored in his first 3 years for us. Mm. And then he bends one in, and then the next week he bends another one, and he went, aye. I think a light switch goes on. And I think this could happen for Firmino. It'd be very nice to see one of them go in.
The thing with Firmino, though, is that he will somehow you somehow trust him to know that if he takes a shot on, he will have done it with the absolute assurance that there's nothing else on or nothing better on. It's that game intelligence that you don't have that snapshot where he's just got his head down and he's not looked up and there's a player suddenly with his arms out saying, oh, I only need to slip in. So it's that notion that he knows he's got that ability to weigh everything up around him and know that that's his best option and back his own ability as well. But it's the way in which he plays and the conversation around him running games is really interesting because he can do it a lot of the time without touching the ball. It's that ability to create space for someone else just by dropping in a space where someone doesn't know how to pick him up, i.e. they have to cheat and let him go or go with him, or they have to pass someone on to him and suddenly there's a gap there for a player such as Mane to exploit it. I think you're right, Rob. I agree with what you're saying. I think those two at the moment are really taking responsibility for Liverpool's results and getting Liverpool's results and getting Liverpool ahead in a game or basically dictating as to Liverpool winning a game. So I think it's encouraging. But his overall game intelligence is phenomenal, I think, for me. And, you know, I think he's probably, at the moment, I think he's the most underrated player in the league for me.
That's a good shout. Did anyone read the Dominic King interview with Sadio Mane talking about them taking responsibility? I thought it was really, really interesting that he talked about Mane being away for the AFCON in January and about he came back and he'd watched all our games, really studiously watched them. And he came back and apparently took it upon himself to take Jordan Henderson to one side at the end when he comes back. And I don't know, I'm paraphrasing Dominic King and Sadio Mane. He said to Jordan, this wasn't us. We weren't playing. And he gave him a technical appraisal of it. And it led to Jordan calling a team meeting and thrashing it out between them. Now, OK, there's not a lot of detail in that anecdote, but you just get the impression that he's only been at the club 4 months. You know, we'd like to, again, it's all kind of cliches. He's a wide man. You don't expect that kind of, you expect the bulldog midfielder to come and have those kind of opinions. I like the fact that he's got that kind of quiet presence of personality about him.
If you remember as well, though, when we signed him, Rob, there was all these things from Southampton fans that his concentration was awful, that he knocked off in games, or he weren't too bothered.
He's a bit of a narc. It's quite converse. Play for himself, yeah.
That's completely converse.
I think the other thing, what I love about him, and I've gone on with this for a while, Neil, haven't I? But he's one, if you got into a bar brawl, you'd have him on your side because he'd kick and he'd bite and he'd stamp. And I think we miss it. I still, to this day, think we miss an element of that. You know, he's come back and you say that, I didn't read the interview, Rob, but he's obviously come back and he's seen some of that and he's had that weird. But I also think that, you know, there's a couple of times if someone goes through him, he'll think, I'll go through you again. I'm going to go. And I go, do you know what? Sometimes you're living on the edge a little bit, but didn't you live on the edge with Suarez? Didn't you live on the edge with Mascherano? And you know what? I love that, Rob, and I don't think we've got enough of it. I was screaming at the telly on Wednesday when the lad takes Mane out when he was going through, and you know what? It was only a yellow, but we didn't have anyone in the referee's ear again going, hang on, ref, that's a red. No, the referee would not have given a red, but get in his ear and you say it. And again, yesterday, sorry to go off on one of you, Neil, but yesterday, Benteke leaves one on Clavin first half and the referee gives it. So if the referee's given a foul there, he's seen some kind of contact. There was not one person going over saying, hang on a minute, where's his card? If you're telling me you pulled up a foul for him, leaving one on him, I don't know if it was an elbow or it was an arm, where was our players around saying to get him that yellow card? And do you know what? I'm not saying that we need to be getting people booked on that, but you know what? Other people do it. And I think if we're horrible because I think we need to be more horrible. I think you need that, Rob. Do you know what I mean?
I that's an interesting point. I felt this already this season. Was against Hoffenheim. They were a bit ready to surround the referee. And I was just thinking, we're not surrounding the referee. The number of times I've ended up turning to people I'm next to and going, was that ours? Did you see our players protest? As if, because normally you go, what was the vehemence of protest? You go, with ours, you can't tell. It could be a stonewall penalty.
We've been having this conversation, though, about surround the referee since, 2006.
Exactly.
You know what I mean? Like, bar the brief cameo of Javier Mascherano, who's a one-man surround the referee machine.
Who got sent off
at Old Trafford for surrounding the referee when no one else bothered to surround.
But that was all because of the Ashley Cole thing.
This conversation led to Pip Paul in being signed so much. This goes back to the mid-90s. People watching Jamie Redknapp and John Barnes.
Under Benitez, one of the things that was said was that Benitez didn't encourage it because he thought it broke the concentration. So you get yourself embroiled in the emotion of the argument, and then you've got to defend the set piece or play for the next point. You've got yourself, and so that Benitez was sort of discouraged. It, but we've literally had this conversation. You know, for instance, when Steve Gerrard was captain in about 2007, there was loads of people I know who were saying Steve Gerrard shouldn't be captain because he's not in the referee's ear enough. He's not over the referee enough. You know what I mean?
Give
it to Carragher rather than Gerrard, because Carragher will do that sort of stuff for you. But then Carragher's got to run from centre half if it's gone up front. You know what I mean? All of that sort of stuff. But
it's not going to change under Klopp, I don't think, because Klopp's players are in the mould of the manager. I think in this kind of thing, aren't they? To an extent. You see, a Mourinho side would get in the referees. A Ferguson would. Rafa's got his reasons. And Klopp, without trying to bestow sainthood on him, I'm not saying he wants to be play fair all the time. I just think he'd think it's a waste of energy. It's disingenuous. It's not who he is.
But what I did think we saw yesterday, I'll go to Dan first on this before Paul, was I actually thought you saw three or four very good tactical fouls from Liverpool. I think Milner does someone when he's pushed up quite high in their sort of their right back position when that could be a break, but instead it's 35 yards from goal and he just does them. Henderson gets his yellow for Loftus-Cheek, and it was very much one where if the lad gets away from Henderson there, suddenly they're running at Liverpool 3-4. I think that Robertson throws one in, if I remember rightly. I think he lashes one in. There was a couple of tackles from Gomez where he actually comes out with the ball, but if he doesn't, the tactical fouls, if you know what I mean, he decides he's just taking everything. And I think that's an improvement, and I don't think that's an accident yesterday. I did actually think that looked a little bit better.
I was made up with Henderson's yellow. I was absolutely buzzing with it because they were away, and they were quick away, and I thought, just take him, and he does. And the whole conversation around this for me buys into two things. So you can either be the team that gets in the ref's ear, surrounds the ref and tries to influence him that way, or you just look after yourself and you box yourself off and you be a bit snide. So for me, if we're going to play the latter, then we have to do it a bit better. I mean, yesterday I see more snide out of Christian Benteke in 90 minutes than I did in a whole year at Liverpool, and I thought Matip played very, very well, but the only frustration I had with him was that sometimes he was more bothered about making sure Benteke was all right 2 minutes after he'd had an elbow in the face from him, if he's given him a bit back. And it's a case of, well, no, just fuck him off. Fuck him off. Leave him be. And then you know, just let the, instead of going over to him and going, sorry about that, you're all right, say to the ref, hey, he's going to elbow me in the next one, you know, the next one in the air, he's going to do me here. Just be snide that way. And take more of those fouls.
Yeah, Henderson was in a running conversation with the ref for about 5 minutes over something like that, and that was the one before. I think when Benteke does land one on Clavin, Henderson had been in a running conversation with the ref about a couple of things, and I thought it was quite strange. And then suddenly that happens, and I do wonder whether or not related to the wrong way to phrase it, but if there was something there. But then there, I was a bit like, well, then Jordan, go and scream in his face now, because you've just been talking to him and pointing at things and pointing at your elbow and talking to him and talking to him.
Yeah,
now's the time where you get to go, ERF.
Because he's given the foul. So there was something, and I haven't seen it back here, so I don't know what it was, but he gave the foul. So Benteke's caught him with something. Yeah. And I had noticed that what Henderson had had, if I'm honest, Neil. But if he had been, are you saying that's the perfect time? And I don't mean 6 or 7 players run over. I don't mean, I wouldn't say it's got to be your captain and that. I'm not into that whole Gerrard didn't do enough. Not my argument. But I just think, as you say there, even a lad over around Clavin, a couple of lads, you all right there? Hey, ref, brother, what was that then? Just to put it in his head, well, hang on, I've given the foul because of course him. It is probably yellow.
Did you think we were doing more tactical fouling? I thought we did.
The Henderson one was made up with, because they say he's at the back four if he doesn't do it. Although Robertson goes to ground on that before. I tell you what, though, just on that, Loftus-Cheek, he's a bit of a beast, isn't he?
Yeah, he's very well.
He's a good footballer.
I thought he played well. Yeah.
I think on the fouling thing, well,
they're just quick. They're two lads on loan, Fosu Mensah and Loftus-Cheek. I thought were their best two players.
Yeah,
I thought they were both really, really good. Both of them. I mean, if I'm Man United, I mean, United look good at the minute. But if I'm Man United or Chelsea supporters watching that, and especially Chelsea supporters, I'm thinking to myself, yeah, can they just play for us?
Yeah, why?
Dominic Solanke. But I it's noticeable. We've picked up quite a lot of yellow cards in all these three games so far, and I think. Possibly, I noticed a lot more of our fouls were taking place in our own.
In their half.
In their half, yeah, I noticed that as we all have observed, and I wonder because against Hoffenheim, we were fouling, but a bit too deep, and that was giving them to those set pieces. And I wonder if Klopp had gone, look, Christ's sake, if we're going to be taking them, take them 20 yards earlier than that. There's no reason not to. Yeah. Because otherwise it's a chance, you goal scoring chance. And actually his comments again were interesting about the defending. He's very pleased with yesterday's display. But you could see against Hoffenheim the development of the defending that's going on. He talked about us being too deep against Watford. We were a lot higher against Hoffenheim. We were high again today. There's defending the high line on set pieces particularly.
What I said to Cope at the match yesterday? And Pardo went with it. I was like, as when I used to play, obviously, I know, but there was a couple where I'd have had them on the 18, but it was really noticeable, Rob, that we were 4 or 5 yards out further than that. And it was almost like, right, so you've got that big gap in between you, but the ball's going to be perfect because we're going to drop. And if it's too deep, Simon, you come and deal with it. And it was very noticeable.
He mentioned the keeper, didn't he? He just said, we give our keeper a chance here this way. I mean, Hoffenheim, I was behind the goal and you could see the depth of it. It was the highest I've ever seen. It was really quite frightening. You go, seriously? They could just dink this in and you could have a one-on-one with the keeper. But they concentrated and Hoffenheim never really... They had one half. I think they had about 4 or 5 in the entire game. We're going back a game here. But generally, it seemed to work.
Just before obviously you come in there, Dan, but Palace, again, when you play Palace, you expect that there's going to be an aerial threat. And they didn't... For all the set pieces they had, you know, we looked comfortable. There was one where Mignolet, great, came through a crowd of players, bump, and collected it, and it just eases. And that's what, if he does that consistently, it's going to build confidence in him, and then your back four are going to be more confident because they're going to say, you know what, this goes in here, and he's going to deal with it.
I thought that was a key moment, that when he came, that comfortable catch he made. As it started to hang in the air, I thought, oh, fuck, he's not going to come. This is going to be a situation. And suddenly, he just comes and he collects. Yeah. And I see other keepers doing that. Mm-hmm. That's almost the first clean, one of probably only 3 clean catches I've seen him be able to or try to take, maybe in the last 2 years. Mm. I'm sure I'm wrong. It's just, but I felt like this. A lot of these are quite easy to take. You're the tallest presence in that box. It's not always a scrap where you have to fly over the top of them. You're the biggest. You can see it, time it, catch it. I just hope that encouraged him to do more of that.
And you see the crowd take a collective breath.
That was the next thing, Dan, wasn't it? Literally, because I think it was when they were having a little bit of pressure trying to get the equaliser, and it just makes everyone
it's dispiriting for the opposition when that happens,
because
hate it when it happens to us.
Yeah, and he just gets it, goes on the floor, takes his time, rolls it out. It was great. Yeah.
Other thing worth pointing out is and it's strange really, Liverpool not as good first half. The manager says at half time, it's a lovely little quote, we showed the players at half time where the spaces are, one pass and then the world is much nicer, which is a nice way to phrase it, the world is much nicer. But all the chances first half, Dan, came from Robertson's delivery. Certainly the best ones. Both Matip and Mane probably should score. It's easy to say that sort of thing. Certainly when the ball's in the air, headers aren't as easy as we all act like they are a lot of the time. But both should find a way to get a proper connection on the ball, and it should either need a great save or a great block.
Yeah, they both should be goals. Matip, there's an argument that Matip should score a lot more, and I do buy into that. I think that's right.
He's now had 2 really good chances. Yeah. He's hit the bar with one, but he's had 2 really good chances in 2 league games.
And there's a lot last season as well. Where you going, lad? You score. And you can, he's kicking himself. Yeah. It's becoming a familiar face where he's just running back from a corner.
I wonder if he got like 2 in 5.
That's what I'm thinking. He got one of Palace away, didn't he?
Yeah,
a really good header. And then you think, but then as you say, then he gets in that position and he's getting 3 headers and he's not doing enough.
He has a few glances where he's getting front post and he's flicking a few on, and there's a couple that I can remember last season as well coming off the bar, very similar to Watford. But just in terms of Robinson, I was right behind his crosses first half, and it's quite it's the old clichéd left foot thing, but he basically takes aim at the keeper, so he sides the keeper with the notion that the cross is going to go away from him all the time. And Baines was very good at it a few years ago. That cross,
Baines, who reminds me of him. Yeah, I'm made up. You said that.
Yeah, it was very, very, very Baines-esque in terms of his crossing ability, where he basically uses the keeper as a sighter.
Trent's got the same ball on him.
Yeah,
on the other side.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
that's interesting. We got like two of them possibly in combination.
Yeah, exactly. Basically, it's going to be interesting to see how we play when we've either Trent or Robertson in the side. In terms of, we could probably do with flooding the box a bit more. Those two chances for Matip and Mane, there doesn't seem to be anyone else in and around or following up in and around. And whether we can just get another late runner in there, and maybe, you know, if Chan's on the pitch, another big lad like that to come in and get one back post. Might be something that we look to in the future. But I thought as well, it was encouraging to see how we opened up those spaces for him to get those crosses in those areas. I think I was encouraging both him and Milner in the first half to carry the ball a little bit more. I thought from the halfway line, he could have carried it a further 10 or 15 that they had to run into, and then work those bits of space where he could get the ball in. But I think Firmino helped out a lot, and then Mane helped out a lot when he come over and played on Ward. Ward's awful. Ward's a terrible footballer, by the way, just as a side note. He's awful, mate, honestly. Honestly, he was like a case study for me for the first half. It was brilliant.
You looked into the middle distance when you said that.
Honestly.
He was on his own there, listeners.
It was a painful football performance that you perversely enjoy.
Yeah. We said it in the pub last night, Neil. I think the great thing about Robertson, and this might sound mad, looked like a fullback. He looked like a fullback,
yeah.
and that's taking nothing away from Milner, who did obviously a really good job there, for, like I say, but he just looked comfortable. He knew what he was doing. He knew where he should be, and I think that's what it's with a bit of a mad compliment. He looks like a fullback, but it you know what I mean?
No, I know what you mean. But where I was most pleased with him, I think we've seen the delivery. We even saw it in pre-season. But where I was most pleased with him was, I think he does his best football when he's putting the delivery in. But I liked how eager he was to go inside and to join, which is where he looked like Milner.
Mm.
And that, you know, if I'm Robertson, I'm probably actually watching tape. I'm actually asking to watch tapes of Milner last season. Mm-hmm. I'm genuinely probably thinking, well, the gaffer was happy with something here last season.
Yeah.
What was it that he was doing that they were happy with? Mm-hmm. Can I do that? Can I offer my other stuff? And I think if he managed, I mean, we didn't see him tested, and that's going to be a thing, but if he manages to withstand those sorts of tests, what I'd be most excited about is he's another player who looks like we've got, Rob, who looks like he's quite happy to go outside or inside.
Yeah.
And I think that, you know, when you're looking at Mane, Coutinho, as and when he returns to the fold, you know, Salah is similar. I'm hopeful that Alexander-Arnold can move in that direction. Milner, broadly, although we all go, oh, he doesn't like going outside. He does actually go onto his left foot a lot, Milner, I think. You know, I think he really does just sort of think, I'll just go this side, because he's constantly being practical whether or not he can do it. But all these footballers, I think, they all look like lads who can go one way or the other. And that's so much harder to defend against, rather than just think, I'll just keep it off his left or I'll just keep it off his right.
Yeah, they're bad foots, not just for standing, is it? There's a good balance to these lads. I think it's a good, although we need the signing still, the squad feels a bit better balanced after a win as well. It's nice to see that what is he, our third choice left back comes in and immediately makes the claim for being the first choice left back. We get our third choice striker, Solanke, come on the pitch, and he kind of looks, yeah, he could be the first choice striker now, you know. Well, out of the pecking order of him, Sturridge and Origi.
And Gomez on the other side. Gomez.
You haven't spoken about Gomez, and Kay doesn't have the spectacular end product coming forward that Trent does, but he looks a safer bet. He's got a muscularity to him where you feel really quite assured with him on the pitch. I know he made some errors. It was He's still raw. I mean, he's only just 20, Joe Gomez, in a tough position on the pitch. But considering, you know, how Jamie Carragher was as a 20-year-old left-back, I think Joe Gomez is in a very good place. We could easily forget how good he is. But you're right, so we've got Trent and Joe Gomez and Klein, who's still technically an ownership of the shirt. Suddenly the full-back positions are madly overstocked.
Just on this, I want to sort of put this to you, really. I think this is the first time we've actually seen the manager rotate in earnest. I think the first time, because I think Phil Bunner said it to me yesterday, and I was being a bit of a smart ass, and I was going, well, what about the end of the Europa League run? But Phil was right to sort of correct me and say, well, the thing about that was, when we go to Swansea and we play Chiravella, I'm not saying that Liverpool don't want to win the game, but they're not treating the game like if Hoffenheim's 9 out of 10 important, then Palace is 8 out of 10 important. Mm. If you know what I mean, for this Liverpool side at the minute, it's 8 out of 10 important, and Hoffenheim's 9. Whereas at that point, whatever the Europa League game was midweek was 10, and the league game was 3.
These were 10 changes he was making for some of those games.
So, but this is actually, you know, Rob, it's a proper piece of rotation. This, in that it's a rotated side with a bench with a view to this is how you win the game, and that is probably the first time we've seen him address that challenge. And I just sort of wonder when that team is written down, because it wouldn't surprise me if that team is written down 10 days ago.
You know, I believe this between Klopp
and his backroom staff, that 10 days ago they've gone, right, all things being equal, if everyone's fit, this is how we're lining up for this one against Crystal Palace, and they've been, they're pretty much just action that and gone, right, there you are. There might be, maybe Milner's impressed and jumped ahead somewhere, or, but that's what I think's happened here. It's proper plan, to me it looks like proper plan rotation.
I think people like to think sometimes managers just like to put the blinkers on and go with the best team, but it's irresponsible if he didn't sit down pre-season and go, there's 5 games in 15 days or whatever it is, or 20 days, and write down a team for each one. Of course, circumstances changed it. What was interesting in his post-match press conference, Neil, which I think shows an insight into the psyche you're talking about, is one early question was, you changed both fullbacks, Jürgen, he went, and a centre-half. You know, and what that showed to me was, I was making changes there, and it worked, didn't it? That's what he was saying. Because obviously he would have been, you know, I don't think he's not a rotator. I just think the circumstance hasn't been there. He's had a whole of last season where there's no call for it because we're only in one big competition. And the season before, it became binary, didn't it? Where with Europa, fuck the Premier League at that stage. We were making 10 changes. Now we're into this proper two important, as Neil says, 8, 9 out of 10 game. Worth games a week. He's got another test. I mean, you can still see we don't have quite enough bodies here. The fact that Mane, who was a doubt all week, and he's now had to have another 90. Did he have the full 90 there? I think he had nearly the full 90 in his legs.
Yeah.
So you kind of go, does Mane start against Hoffenheim? It's going to be difficult to ask him to go again there. But still, these things are encouraging. And the manager, and there's a boldness in that rotating. There's no doubt about it.
Look, I think that you have to look at whether he would do it again to such a degree, because he probably knows that he's got to go Wednesday and then Sunday with the same team now, and near enough full strength as he can be with Hoffenheim and then Arsenal. But I mean, I was encouraged by it. I think what I mentioned to Rob before outside is that I thought it was interesting that maybe the circumstances of the whole game and the setup of the game and the fact that we rotate allows everyone to, in some perverse way, just relax a bit more. So it's basically...
Lowers the expectation a touch, you think?
Kind of sets the script a little bit of what we're going out to do. Mm. So, you know, it's not this notion that we're playing our 11 best players and we've got two of our best subs on the bench who can come on. And if it's not been done, like I referenced earlier, in the first half an hour, or it's not looking like it's going our way in the first half an hour, everyone's then panicking and it's panic stations. It kind of allows into the fact that, okay, well, we've got lads here who are coming into the side and they haven't been in it for 3-4 weeks, or it's the first start of the season in some cases. So we need, as a crowd, to let them obviously patiently build into it a bit more than I thought. I thought we'd seen that. Okay, it was a bit quiet in there, but I thought maybe there wasn't that anxiety whereby if something doesn't come off, or, you know, if it's not really happening, then everyone's saying, well, that's it, then obviously it's done. And that, and we've seen that a lot last season, especially in the first half in games and as games grew and more. So I think it's interesting that it kind of, and it's very Benitez-esque.
You're talking about pragmatism, aren't you? You're going into football matches wanting to be pragmatic rather than be the best team in the world.
Exactly, yeah.
There's that, Dan, but the other thing I think as well, and all those lads, Joe Gomez last season gets a couple of cup games, and I put in my piece, Joe Gomez goes to bed tonight feeling like he's part of the first team squad.
Yeah.
Whereas last season, he knows he's just been dropped in for 2 cup games, if you know what I mean, and there's no intention to have him properly involved. Whereas now he goes into training on Monday, and he's not thinking, I can defo get me start for Hoffenheim, or defo get me start for Arsenal. But he is thinking, I've got 10 league appearances in my ear between now and Christmas. All it needs is a bit of luck with an injury, and then you never know from there. And that's quite different, isn't it? He now feels part of this thing that's going on, massively part of it, and it's not just him. There's others on the pitch, like Daniel Sturridge, for instance, who feel massively part of it, rather than just like, oh, well, we'll see what happens.
There's suddenly 18 to 20 players who know they'll get a game once every 3 to 4 weeks. And that's
as a minimum.
As a minimum, yeah. And that's massive. That's massive probably around the place as well, because it's just a lot more involved and a lot more involvement for those players. And I think last season we kind of shoehorned ourselves a little bit into this, you know, magnificent blowing away, free-flowing football that basically only centred around 12, tops 13 players. And to break that, we didn't really know how else to play. So when players were coming in, it was kind of unfair on them to expect them to be in that mould or in that same vein as that other 11. So I think that maybe it just, like Rob says, I think it maybe adds a little bit more pragmatism to everyone that, okay, we know what we need to get out of this. We need to win the game 1 or 2 nil. And the thing with this as well is that I always said last season, there's possibly 13 teams in this league who will happily come away from Anfield with a 2-0 defeat. And we forget that because they don't have to answer to anyone. You know, there's not going to be any kind of crowd revolt. There's not going to be a manager who's bollocking them. There's not going to be a chairman having them in saying, what was that, lads? They've kind of half written the game off already going into it.
Do you know what, Dan? On that point, I think it's a really good point. But I think Palace yesterday kind of can set that. At the moment with United are you know, steamrolling teams. And I think there are teams now who, because of what they're doing to other teams, will do exactly that. They'll turn up at United and they won't even have a goal. But if Palace would have just got a point there yesterday, your likes of your Hulls and all those teams that you've just mentioned potentially then go to Anfield and go, oh no, Palace do this. You sit in deep, they can't get frustrated, Liverpool don't be patient, and you come away with something. Now, even though we've done it 1-0, I think it now leads to think, well, you can come and do that, but we'll break you down somehow. And we might win 1-0, we might win 6-0, but we're going to win. And that's where the mentality of those teams then go, well, it's Anfield, so we'll take that. Yeah. And that's good. I'm pleased that there's some teams.
I think they took that. You're right. I think they took the defeat. The game doesn't change at 1-0. You'd half think they're coming out.
You get their past
Palace muscle memory and go, if we come at Liverpool, you never know what happens with Liverpool. They don't. They're scared that we're going to score again. And we look like we're going to score again and again and again. That was interesting, that. So I thought that you're right. They did. You said that to me. It's like you said, Dan, it's as if Palace had bought into the script as much as us and our crowd.
Yeah. Well, but I think there's something on that, though, Rob, which is, you know, for De Boer and for these players, he's set up with his three at the back, he's set up with his shape. Yes, it's been more defensive. But if he comes to Anfield and they get battered 3-0, 4-0, then all of a sudden they're being battered 3-0, 4-0. Mm-hmm. I just thought it was a classic example of everyone almost just going, you know what, this is sound, this. Yeah, because if you're De Boer, you get to have your post-match thing where you say, well, Benteke had a couple of chances and we did all right, and nothing. There's nothing to worry about here. We've just gone to Anfield and got beat 1-0 and we've got to be a bit more clinical.
A moralist victory.
Yeah, whereas if you get done 4-0 and it goes 1-0 and suddenly before you know where you're at, Liverpool keep turning you around and they score 3 goals in the last 10 minutes, then everyone's saying Crystal Palace collapsed. Mm-hmm. And then you're the manager having to talk about a collapse rather than, you know, getting beat 1-0. And it's a lot easier for the whole football club.
Yeah, because they go to Anfield, they're demoralised after 3-0. They don't know where they're going because they've got a new manager, and even the players at the back of their minds are thinking, this guy could be totally shit for this league. And they can see a 4-0 win, a defeat. They know that could happen to them, and then their season's it, and then they've got a relegation thing. So they get to 76, 77 minutes. They've already had a good day out. You know, they've already had a good day out, and they're not going to let the goal spoil it. Mm. Do you know what I mean? They're going to go out, and they still stayed stoic and resistant, and they've only got beaten 1-0. Mm-hmm. And De Boer, as you said, De Boer can come out with that crap afterwards, right? They should have got something.
And it's sound. Everyone gets to go with sound. He doesn't sound ridiculous.
It's a platform.
If they get beat 4-0 because they concede 3 in the last 10 minutes, he comes out afterwards and says, yeah, we could have got something from that. Everyone just laughs at him. Mm-hmm. Whereas that, you know, I think everyone sort of falls in with that. Listen, we very rarely, because there's so much to talk about, we very rarely get to shift along. But the other thing I took from the game yesterday, Rob, and I'll go to you first on this because it's your area of expertise, is Liverpool couldn't have to do with an attacking midfielder. That as much as I thought that the shift to the 4-2-4 worked, I think no matter what he does out of... I think if Henderson's fit, he's going to put Henderson on the pitch unless something drastic happens. So I think whatever he does with Chan, Milner and Wijnaldum at the minute, and even allowing for Coutinho to stay and be reintegrated back into the fold, if Lallana's out till December, Coutinho can't play every game. And I'm looking at that thinking Liverpool just could do with one more quality attacking midfielder now, because I understand with Woodburn, and you don't want to block Woodburn's progress, but he's not in the 18 yesterday. These games are coming thick and fast. And, you know, we're talking now about this run of games where there's been 5 and 14 days. Well, the next one's 7 and 21. And I'm just thinking, no matter what happens here, getting someone else in who can play midfield in an attacking way. It doesn't have to be a pure attacking midfielder. It doesn't have to be a number 10, but someone who can attack from midfield. Because Wijnaldum is the biggest concern for me. I don't think Henderson was great yesterday, but he didn't just go missing. Wijnaldum barely was involved in the match. He must have got on the ball less than 30 times. And he didn't tackle anyone. He didn't go past anyone. He didn't intercept.
No, I mean, in a way, yes. I thought he had his one contribution that anyone can remember was, I thought, quite an interesting one, just to quickly divert onto him. He gets a good shot away, which forces the keeper to a save, and then there's a follow-up and a bit of a scramble in the second half. And in a way, it helped our momentum, but that's not giving Wijnaldum particular credit for that. I think he had a poor game. I agree entirely.
I think my point is, sorry, I'm not making it very clearly. My point is Milner, Chan and Wijnaldum will all make more sense playing for Liverpool in centre midfield if there's an attacking midfielder playing. That's my point.
And Jordan Henderson. To be very, without overanalyzing football, to you know, you watch players in midfield and there are two types. There is the midfielder and then there's the attacking guy. And Wijnaldum, Chan, Henderson and Milner are blunt instrument midfielders who do all kinds of interesting, sophisticated jobs, but they will not create an enormous amount of chances or score you goals. Then there are the little jinkers like Coutinho and Lallana and occasionally a big jinker. They're the guys. Basically, what happens, if you've got one of those in your three, you've actually got four attacking players on the pitch. Mm-hmm. Four players who want to take shots at the goal and make goals. If you don't, you have a three and a three rather than a two and a four. We saw it under Rodgers. I remember it was so binary sometimes in the 13-14 season. When he dropped Coutinho into the midfield behind Sterling, Suarez and Sturridge, we'd be so much more potent. But he sometimes wouldn't have that, would he? And we'd dog out like that game in the run-in at West Ham. But you knew you were blunter. You knew you weren't the real Liverpool. But games like that at home, I just think he simply didn't have the personnel there yesterday, and that's your point. Woodburn, he looks like he could have that number 8 in him, but it's very 17, Jesus Christ. You'd have to drop him in and hope he had a couple of blinders to convince yourself. Yeah. But yeah, we need that player. I mean, hopefully we've got him. He's called Coutinho.
No, I'll say hopefully Coutinho, but even allow him for Coutinho.
You want one more?
I think you want more.
You say, Neil, if that's, you know, it's your Hoffenheim home and Arsenal, one won't come in knackered, so you need that other player.
And I'd go from I'd love just to buy someone like Draxler and drop him into the mix. I'd take Mahrez now. There's a number of players out there. Keita's an interesting one. From what I can see of him and understand about him, if we could still get him, is Keita seems to fall between the two, not fall between them, but be able to fulfill both roles. Be incredible, almost Gerrard-like, without putting any pressure on that lad if he ever comes to us. But that's, Gerrard could do both those things. He could be whoever you want him to be.
Xabi Alonso was just just the wrong word, but was just a midfielder.
Yes, yeah. Sissoko, Alonso, Mascherano, they are midfield players in the moment. More than Wijnaldum, Henderson, Chan are. Yeah.
I watched Naby Keita last night for 45 minutes.
He got booked, didn't he, yesterday?
He got booked, but he very much plays in that space between our two threes, if you like.
Does he?
Yeah, very much. He was very number 10 in terms of his positional play and where he plays and what he tries to link up. Mm. And it feels like you need that because at the moment, I think we've started the season, even into pre-season, as a three, we look very flat at times. Mm. And it's sometimes a case of, even if Coutinho's on the pitch and he's in that three, okay, you get the ball up early, but it's a case of go on then. And there's not really that link that drops in between the two of those lines. And I think Lallana's very good at that. I think he's excellent at that, at just filling in that space.
I actually thought we missed Lallana more yesterday than Coutinho.
I think we missed him all season massively. Yeah. I think we really have.
Klopp made the point about Hoffenheim in particular. He said this game was made for him. Did you see that in his post-match? But, Lallana's a really good player, but you need at least one of those lads. Yeah. And we've got two who are not available to us at the moment, which is a kick in the teeth. You know, I think if we'd had one of those two, we might have been beating teams 4-0. We might have been Watford 5-2 and Palace 4-0. So fuck off, United. You know, but seriously, they haven't got anybody out. It's doing my head in, by the way. Can I just say that out here? None of them are listening. Yeah. It's doing my head in.
They're very good, Rob. I've been telling you for a while, they're very good.
They're all right. They were lucky to go in 1-0 at half-time against Swansea.
But the point is, Paul, this is, it is what looks like, just looks like it's missing. And as I say, it helps everybody else. It means that if you wanted to rest Henderson, you could play Chan and Wijnaldum in a flat two and put the other player in front. If you want to have the staggered three, you can go Henderson. And if he is going to play Milner in centre mid, and I think Milner, as I say, ended the game really strongly, but you get to go Henderson, Milner plus one more, Henderson, Wijnaldum plus one more, Henderson, Chan plus one more.
Yeah.
I just think you're we could quite quickly get into a situation, as I say, this isn't about, I think Coutinho will stay, I think he'll be a Liverpool player, and I think he'll reintegrate himself and everything will be lovely until the end of the season, and then it'll all get looked at again. But it looks to me like, where's this one more? Because if there is no Lallana till December, then in real terms, there's no Lallana till January.
Do you think the Oxlade could be that player?
Possibly. It's not clear yet whether or not, which of your two types of midfielders, and I like that you've reduced it to just two, it helps the conversation.
You know, I like to make things simple. Yes. Like my few football formations.
Yes, that there's I don't know which of those two midfielders he is, to be honest, but with his pace you'd like to think he can do some of the other bits. But
yeah
I think I'd say, Neil, you don't know what's going on behind the scenes, and hopefully you mentioned Draxler, who apparently at PSG he's surplus to requirements there, and we were linked with him, so I know he's maybe more of your wing type play, but then
I think he's more of an orthodox attacking player. But, but you see, here's an idea which I don't know. I'm increasingly banging a drum for, and I think if we get a couple more bodies in, there'll be a case for it. I think Roberto Firmino. I mean, of course, we need him up front, but I think he could play that role we've now earmarked for Coutinho. Should he come back in, I think he can play number eight all day long. I think the extra bit of space he'd get there, he'd really enjoy. He's got a lovely weight of pass on him, shifts feet quickly, sees things. I mean, I don't see what he hasn't got to play that role.
The only issue with that I have is that you'd kind of want another Firmino in front of him.
Absolutely. Do you know what I mean? Right. I know, that's the argument.
The left field one I'd go for, after watching him yesterday, it'd be Mahrez. I think Mahrez could do a job for us in there. I think maybe if... Even coming off from wide, I think his game intelligence is really good, and I think maybe someone that can link for us, I'm not too sure, but I think we definitely need to look at someone.
Mahrez to me is really strange. Player of the Year 2 years ago, and that Roma appeared to be the only side.
The only club, yeah.
Putting proper money on the table for him is, you know, Steve Graves has this with me, and he says, there's some footballers where you wonder whether or not something's gone round football. That we don't know. That, you know what I mean? Someone said, oh, I'm not sure about his, what he's like in training, or blah, blah, blah. Yeah, I think it might be that he's mercurial, and at the minute there's six managers in the top six who are all looking for someone who's not mercurial, because they haven't got the luxury of that because of how tight it's going to be. But, you know, for instance, even Everton don't appear to have had a proper sniff. But maybe they've had the nod. He wouldn't even think about going to use lads. Don't go there. I don't know. I just think it's strange with Mahrez. I'd like to know what the gossip is.
He always looks a yard off for me. Whether it's a be arsed thing about him, whether he just can't be arsed to get that yard, because he quite clearly could do. But he just always looks a yard off in terms of being up with the game. But when he's on the ball, he's clearly got really good ability. Oh,
that's absolutely right for me. I've watched him closely. If you watch him closely enough, you can see what the reticence is. I would have him. He's got a bit of the touch of the Ozils about him. On his day, on the front foot, in attack, he could run a game. But there are days where he switches off and he's not asked.
And if he was in a bit of a dog battle, you don't want him when you're on the pitch, for you or one of them. Yeah.
It's a cliche. It's a cliche of that type of player as well. But it does seem true of him. Having said that, I think we can accommodate that.
And also, he was in a lot of dog battles for Leicester.
They
played hard. You know, a lot of their football wasn't a battle of laughs when they were winning. Every week,
and getting back in shape and hitting them on the break, wasn't it?
I don't know.
He looks to me like he likes it when he finds the ball at his feet in the middle of the pitch. He doesn't like it when he's too far wide. When he's caught, when he was told to hold his position, he's you know, you're defending first. I remember watching him very close in that game where they turned us over last season, and he was out wide a lot of the time, and obviously been told keep your shape, and he really wasn't enjoying it or doing it very well.
But we do look like we need someone. All right, one more thing then before we all disappear off is the Hoffenheim game. Are we expecting no surprises then in terms of the team selection, Paul? Do you think he reverts back to the front three that we expect, that he goes Henderson, Chan, one other, which I think is the interesting conversation point at the minute. He goes Alexander-Arnold right.
Yeah.
He goes Lovren and Matip, goalkeeper, obviously. And maybe left back might be a bit up in the air as well. That's fair.
Yeah, 100%. If you asked us to write our teams down, I think it'd be that, Neil. And those question marks that you put would be the ones I had. I think obviously Trent comes back in at right back. And I think the front three will be the front three that we all expect.
I'm going to violently disagree with everyone here now. And I'll either look very stupid or a visionary. But I think he's going to play a horse for the course team. I don't think he's going to take the approach, I put out my best. It is a massive game for Liverpool Football Club, but I don't think his view will be, I'll put out my most talented 11 and blow them away as the best form of defence here. Because I think because in this sort of game, you can throw yourself at them, score an early goal, and it doesn't make much difference really to their game plan at all because of the nature of Europe and away goals. I think he might look to overload the midfield with the blunt type. And I just have this mad feeling that he could play with a front two, something like a diamond. I think he could do it. I wouldn't have advocated against Palace, but in this kind of game where have a lot of the ball, keep the game very static in midfield. Who would a front two? Do you know who my front two would be? Solanke and Salah. Salah brought much because I think we'll have a load of space in behind them. Salah can play as a number 10, almost actually also as a lone forward. I could see him tucking him in behind and playing a diamond, which would have combinations. I don't know where Henderson, Wijnaldum, Chan, and Milner. And
you think he'd rest Firmino and Mane?
I think he'd put Firmino and Mane on the bench as the break glass option. Yeah, because I do think he can. Our first half score is good enough that he can also have just half of one eye on Arsenal. He's allowed to do that in this case. I know it would. I don't think he's taking a risk in doing this. Because
I think he might do this if we'd have gone 3-0 against Hoffenheim. Mm. I think he might be right. If we'd have got to 3-0, I think he might have done this. As it is, when it's a 2-0, it goes to 1-2. And I just think,
as I said, I can be slapped down on this one because this is a bit wild, right? And I also don't think it's a shoo-in that Trent comes back in. I think I think Trent could come back in for Arsenal. I think he will have been encouraged by Joe Gomez there, and he might think Hoffenheim are a decent set piece team, a bit of height at the far post. Mm-hmm. Trent, fantastic going forward. This isn't about us needing a shitload of goals here. Trent's got a rick in him. We can see that. I think Robertson might have done enough to keep his place. In fact, I would think he would, because I think he'd say, I'd rather that lad over Moreno, just, you know, given the balance of his talent. Yes, Matip and Lovren. I think he'll go with Gomez. I think he could go with that blunt four and a mad front two. And I think Firmino and Mane might be on the bench.
I can see us being unchanged from the first leg. And I think that the reason being is that I don't think under Jurgen Klopp in Europe, you're going to see a stereotypical European away side who goes and dogs a 1-0. I think you'll see very much like for like, both home and away, and we'll go with the notion that we go and win a game by hook or by crook, no matter where we're playing. So I think that he'll probably place his faith in the lads that have already played in the first leg and say, listen, lads, this won't be too dissimilar to what you faced last week. Bear the fact that we're at home, I don't think it'll be overly different. I don't think there'll be a side who plays particularly in a different way. Hoffenheim might look to dog it a little bit more and try and get one early, or they might come out the traps and fly at us and try and get one early. The only thing I would say is that I'd expect Wijnaldum to drop out the 11, and I don't know whether that'll be Wednesday or it's for Arsenal. But just with how leggy he looks, as we referenced before, I think he might drop out.
But do you think Firmino and Mane, and everyone picking this first choice team or last week's team, that brings them both onto their fourth start in 10 days? That's big at this stage of the season. I wonder whether Salah dropped. I wonder whether he thought Salah for this one, Mane for that one.
I don't think you're doing both, though.
So drop them both out.
Yeah,
I'm not saying they would.
I think Firmino,
Salah comes back in.
I think Firmino gets all five. It wouldn't surprise me if he maybe rests Mane. But
could be Firmino and Salah sort of behind my four.
I think Firmino gets all five games, and I think he'll have had the attitude of, not least because Firmino doesn't get selected for Brazil a lot of the time.
Yes.
And I think he might have had the attitude of, right, some of you have just got to grin and bear this. In the same way that I think Henderson plays all five games, yeah. Firmino plays all five games, Matip plays all five games, and the goalkeeper plays all five, and everyone else is maybe a little bit more. It might be one eye on it, but I wonder if Mane, with his attitude, his application, the thing that you said earlier on, is
leadership.
You know, yeah, is the idea of, for instance, that if we're beginning to compare Mane to Suarez, the idea that Suarez doesn't play all five of these games for Liverpool would just seem absolutely crazy, and we wouldn't tolerate
super
it.
And we know
that the footballer wouldn't tolerate it. The footballer would be banging on the manager's door going, are you kidding? Are you absolutely kidding?
That's very possible. I can't argue with that.
Okay.
We'll see.
We will see. Liverpool face Hoffenheim on Wednesday. Listen, if you're listening to this, we'll be covering the game against Hoffenheim. We've got our new preview show for European games called Under the Lights. That's coming up this week. We've also got our review of Crystal Palace, where we'll go into greater depth, have a longer chat about the rotation question and the manager's mindsets in and around all of these games and how he's approaching that. That's coming up for you as well, and all the other fantastic stuff that's sitting there as well, week in, week out. It's £5 a month to subscribe to. Please consider doing so. Thank you very much to Paul Johnson, to Rob Gutman, and to Dan Morgan. It's been a terrific Anfield wrap this week because Liverpool won a mundane 1-0. Normally they're hard to talk about, but not for this Liverpool side. See you in a bit. Sports Social Podcast Network.